Welcome to episode 149 of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and today I had the pleasure of interviewing fellow registered dietitian Taryn Cullen. Taryn is originally from upstate New York, now living and working in Charlotte, North Carolina as a performance dietitian. While obtaining her nutrition master's from UNC Chapel Hill, she interned with the Olympic sports dietitian and completed a sports nutrition rotation in Florida with NFL and tactical athletes. Since becoming a dietitian, she's worked with a wide variety of athletes within various professional leagues, in addition to those who are fitness-focused or simply want to improve their relationships with food and their body. Today, we had a super interesting conversation on just sports nutrition in general, but how does this tie in with intuitive eating? You know, some of the major questions that you have about, you know, what are the most popular and most commonly used substances? Supplements. Supplements are actually substances in the sports performance world. But anyways, lot of really good takeaways today. Whether you consider yourself an athlete or not, I promise you're going to get some golden nuggets out of today's interview that are going to help you with whether it's your mindset or actual performance. Now, as always, don't forget to leave us a review and tag us on Instagram. We're always looking to hear what you think, and you're more than welcome to join our private Facebook community. Just search Fit Friends Tribe, request to join, and that's where we'll talk about the weekly episodes, answer any of your questions that you have, and it's a space to connect with other like-minded women who are just like you, trying to live fierce and be free. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fierce. Taryn, welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're so excited to have you today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
If you guys could see us right now, we're both bundled up complaining about cold weather. That's not really cold, but we're just cold people.
This is what happens when you get used to 80, 90 degree weather.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a dietitian.
So I am originally from upstate New York. So once upon a time, I was able to bear the cold weather, not so much anymore. I didn't even know that being a dietitian was honestly a career choice. What happened was I got my undergrad in biology, just really love science, love learning about the human body, and then came out of that thinking, okay, well, now what? And I got a job working as a lab tech, doing blood tests all day, knew that that wasn't where I was going to stay, started looking at graduate programs. And that's when I came across nutrition masters in public health at UNC Chapel Hill. And what's funny is I remember thinking, I don't know if I want to go to Chapel Hill. It seems like such a small town place. And of course, I moved there without ever visiting the campus, and it's massive and beautiful. And I loved my time there. So that's how I ended up being in a nutrition program. And it was a really great experience.
How did you know that you, or did you know that you wanted to work in sports? Were you in sports growing up, or kind of how was movement intertwined in your life?
It's funny because when I look back at it now, it seems so obvious, but along the way, it really wasn't something I thought about. It was, you know, I like the medical field. I like biology. I like the human body. But looking back at it, started running when I was in seventh grade, did cross country, did indoor track, did outdoor track. When I got to undergrad, I stopped playing sports so I could study more and spent time volunteering with the athletic trainer and going to all the sports games and helping him any way that I could, really for, at that time, was just no reason. And then coming to Chapel Hill, there was an opportunity to work with their sports dietitian, and I just felt lit up inside. I have to meet this person. I have to try this. I didn't even really know that that was a thing yet again. And meeting her, she was an amazing mentor. I'm really grateful for the time that I had. That was outside of my dietetic internship. So it was just even more of a learning experience. And then spending so much time with her while I was doing my master's, I was like, okay, part of my dietetic internship has to be in sports. And afterwards, I'm looking for sports, athletes, teams, whatever I can get in that realm.
That's so funny because I also, I did a victory lap. So I went 4 years undergrad and did a victory lap. But I also did did an internship with sports nutrition in the athletic program. So that's so funny. So you work a lot with athletes, right? That's kind of the area that you're passionate about. What are some of the more common challenges that the athletes that you work with face, and kind of what does your role do, or what in that area do you love doing the most?
So I work with a huge variety of athletes. I work with athletes that are as young as middle schoolers, and I work with professional athletes. I've even had the experience of working with, retired NFL, and kind of what happens to these people when you kind of have to integrate back into normal life. That's a huge thing for college athletes too, is okay, my life was so scheduled, so focused, and now I'm entering the workforce. What is that going to look like in terms of physical activity and eating and all of that stuff? So there really is a huge variety, even in working with athletes. I would say across the board, most sports dietitians would probably say this, but in meeting an athlete, I would say 9 times out of 10, one of their major issues is going to be meeting their needs and just not being able to meet their energy needs, which is really interesting because a lot of times they come in with expectations of leaning out or all these things, or they want to try XYZ trend, or they're curious about a new supplement. And I'm like, whoa, we need to make sure your body's getting what it needs, make sure that you're eating enough throughout the day, that you're getting, XYZ thing that might be more important for your sport, and really getting into that foundational piece of nutrition, because so many people do have holes in that. And then they're just trying to, or at least the message they're receiving is something out there is going to quote unquote fix that, or, help them with their performance, when in reality, a lot of times it's more basic than that. I really enjoy working with them as a person just because they're usually so curious. They like learning. They like learning about nutrition and how it's going to help them in their sport and with their activity. And like I said, there's just a huge variety in people. You really never know who you're going to meet or who you're going to talk to.
I love that you bring up the fact that basically athletes are humans too, right?
Yes.
And they have a lot of the same challenges that, you and I face. But it's important, for the woman listening to this podcast, is that you don't have to necessarily be in a sport to be considered an athlete, right? A lot of the things that we're going to talk about, you can still kind of fall under the same guidelines. So, you mentioned that eating enough. Do you find that it's more in women? Is it common in men too? Or where do you find kind of some of those challenges?
I will say it's fairly common across the board, but of course, feeding into stereotypes, a lot of times the female athletes are more so wanting to lean out, and they think that's going to make them become better at their sport. You still get that a little bit in males, but they want to lean out and maintain muscle mass and build muscle mass and think that's going to help with their strength or their power or their explosiveness. So it seems to kind of manifest in two different ways. Most of the time I find that with men, they don't think it's necessarily surprising that they're not meeting their needs. But I think with women, it is a little surprising for them, for me to say, do you think that you're eating enough? That's a question I ask a lot. I'll have someone speak through their day, tell me what they're normally having. And then, walking me through what your training regimen look like. And then I'll say to them, taking those two things in combination, do you think that you're getting enough right now? And a lot of times they sit there and they're like, well, maybe I'm actually not. And that can be a really surprising, important moment for them.
Where do you find that the pressure, we're talking about, and we're going to talk about this a lot more a little bit later, but where do you think that pressure comes from to be leaner, right? If we're talking about sport, is it a specific sport? Is it, a particular person, or where's the message coming from?
For some sports, I would say it's a lot more ingrained than others, right? We have sports that if you're a coach, if you're a strength coach, if you're a dietitian, athletic trainer, whoever in the sports world, you typically know that they're called like aesthetic sports, wrestling, gymnastics, running, swimming, things where a lot of times people relate their physique and their appearance to how they're going to perform. When you think about that type of an athlete, unfortunately, most of us have a picture in our head of what that looks like. And unfortunately, that picture is only accounting for one type of person. And like I said, an athlete can really be anybody. They can come from all walks of life. It's really just, from my perspective, someone who has work ethic and perseverance to train whatever they're training for. And so that truly can be anybody. And so when we are thinking, okay, well, a swimmer looks like this, a runner looks like this, a wrestler looks like this, because that's what we've been exposed to, because those are the people who have been supported or encouraged. So they've been the people who have succeeded. Then we start to think, okay, well, if I want to succeed, I've got to look like so-and-so. If I want to be number one, I have to do what the current number one is doing. When in reality, right, when we think about nutrition or any of this health information, it's going to look different from person to person, right? We're all individuals. Our needs are going to be different. Our training's going to look a little bit different, even if the ultimate goal to be better, faster, stronger, whatever it may be, is similar to one another.
That's such a great point to bring up. You know, I've worked with younger athletes as well, but specifically in swimming and diving, right? I've had them come to me saying, you know, you talk about aesthetic, right? So that it's meaning that when you and I, when the regular, you know, average person thinks aesthetic, they think bikini body, right?
Yeah.
Explain what aesthetic means in these specific types of sports.
Absolutely. So aesthetic usually means when there is some kind of known focus in that sport to have a certain kind of physique. When we think about swimmers, and a lot of times it's actually based on what their uniform is too. A wrestler is in a singlet, a gymnast is in a really tight one piece, a swimmer is potentially in a really tight one piece or a really small bottom, right? Runners, a lot of times they might be in their Spankies, which is what anyone
Spankies.
Else might. I know. The cross-country term coming back,
yeah.
Which anyone else would probably look at it and say, that looks like underwear and like a really small top on top, or, you know, the really short shorts. So those sports when you don't have a lot of coverage, there is some kind of pressure on that physique. Traditionally, you know, runners being thinner, lighter to be faster, swimmers being thinner, lighter, more lean to be more aerodynamic, whatever it may be, wrestlers and having to try and make weight. Gymnasts, they're scoring, unfortunately, having a pretty good emphasis on the way that they look. So we do have all these things that are kind of coming from, sure, outside people or outside focuses, but are so ingrained for such a long time that they've become part of the sport as well. Even though when it comes to performance, there's not really good scientific backing for it.
That's so interesting. And you talk that you've worked with kind of these athletes across the spectrum, right? Their spectrum of life. So how can kind of this athlete's mindset be hurtful in terms of body image, right? Because maybe somebody's listening to this and they don't, you know, compete in anything now, but they recognize, oh, I was actually a gymnast growing up, or I did dive, you know, I did one of these aesthetic sports.
Right. I think it's really important to distinguish between being a competitive person and competing as an athlete and comparison, right? Those two things can feel the same because when we're competing, oftentimes we are competing against one another in teams or individual, and comparison kind of feels the same way. Competition can be great for all of us, right? Just trying to be better than we were yesterday, that's kind of a mini competition, right? Just trying to be better than the current fastest swimmer, there's nothing really wrong with that. But when we dive into the comparison of how someone looks, how someone eats, the supplement somebody takes, their training regimen, that's when we fall into this rabbit hole of one size fits all, when that's so far from the actual truth. And kind of having that mindset of competing / comparison, right? That can carry on into later life. And just being on Instagram and seeing other people and thinking, well, they're doing that, so I'm going to do that. And they look like they're happy doing this thing, so I'm going to do that thing, and then it's going to make me happy. It's just kind of this false narrative, this false cause and effect chain that we think we're seeing. When in reality, you know, what works for somebody else isn't going to necessarily work for me. And that's something that I try to tell my athletes from a young age, is that I can provide you with general education. We can talk about nutrient timing, things to have before, during, and after practice, or micronutrients that are important to certain sports. But I can't sit here and tell you what you need unless you and I have like a serious one-on-one conversation and really talk through your habits and your life, because each person looks so different.
As you were kind of describing, right, that comparison mode, that was exactly what I was thinking. And you brought it up of, gosh, it doesn't sound too different from, you know, the average woman who's scrolling on Instagram and constantly living in this mode of comparison. So on the flip side though, right, athletes tend to be competitive, right? And a little competitiveness, is that a word, is good for us. So how can kind of that mindset be helpful? And what are some things that you see from athletes that you encourage to other people?
I think when we take that, you know, competitiveness and see people who are also doing really well, try and changing that conversation within ourselves to be like, okay, I also want to do really well, but what does that look like for me? What am I doing right now that I can potentially improve on, instead of saying, Katie's doing really well, I'm going to do exactly what Katie does and I'm going to be Katie, because that's not reality, right? Having that little bit of competitiveness is what motivates some of us, what drives some of us, is that I am going to be a little bit better. If you've ever even ran a 5K, right? They talk about your kick at the end, that little burst of energy so that you can finish. Maybe the encouragement is, you know what, that person 5 feet in front of me, I'm going to beat them. That person 5 feet in front of them, I'm going to beat them. It can be a really great motivator, releasing those endorphins, making us feel like, okay, I really put forth my best effort. But like you said, it's important to separate that from truly comparing ourselves and trying to be someone we're not.
I think that's important for the almost the amateur athlete, you know, for a lack of better terms, to think about too, is what is my motivator, right? And am I running a marathon because I want to run a marathon, or is it this because so-and-so runs marathons and they look this certain type, and not getting trapped in that comparison mode?
That's such a great point to bring up, because so often I start conversations with people, you know, tell me about your goals, what's important to you? And I think what they don't expect me to say is why. Why is that important to you? Why do you think that that's going to make you better? You know, what have you heard? What have you learned that has made this thing, this goal, whatever it is, so important to you? I think you can follow that down the path of why and just keep asking until you really get to the heart of whatever that reason is. And that's what should be a motivator. That should be, you know, what drives us and what, you know, maybe helps us lean into that competitiveness that we all have a little bit better. You know, there's nothing wrong with truly believing that your only competitor is who you were yesterday. You don't really need other people to have this mini competition in your mind as motivation.
Right. We're often our hardest critic. That's for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Please don't hate me for interrupting today's episode, but I had to let you know that I did open back up the Reboot Bootcamp. I designed this online course specifically for those of you who aren't ready to make the investment in one-on-one coaching. However, you're ready to take action and test the waters to dive a little bit deeper with intuitive eating. This course is 10 weeks long, but it was designed for you to work at your own pace, whether it's visually by watching videos, listening to the audios just like you do a podcast, or jumping in on some live accountability calls with other women who are really in your shoes, experiencing the same struggles with food, exercise, and their body. My goal is to just empower you with the tools to help you feel successful and more confident in your own skin and stop measuring your success by the numbers on the scale. Now, because you're a fit friend, you know I take care of you. So if you go to katiehick.com/bootcamp, enter the registration code or discount code, registration code, whatever, code, Morse code, FFHH, that's going to get you $50 off the already coronavirus crisis discounted price. Oh, and if you're enjoying today's episode, would you do us a favor, screenshot and post it on Instagram and tag Fit Friends Happy Hour? We love you so much already, but we would freaking love you even more. I hope to see you in the Reboot Bootcamp, but for now, back to today's episode.
So let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk about supplements. What are some of the most popular or commonly type, because I feel like that was one of the things that I did as a sports nutrition intern. It was like, I was just constantly reviewing supplements. So what are some that you see most of?
First, let me just say supplements are life if you are in the sports and fitness industry. I have interns roll through and I'm like, what do you know about supplements? Because I'm going to tell you right now, that's what I'm going to have you be looking up this whole time. Something new comes up every single time. And okay, somebody needs to be on it looking up all this research. The most common ones for sure are going to be protein powders. I feel like that's a given. There's some ready-to-drink shakes out there that have protein in them. There's a couple of decent ones that I do recommend people have, but one thing that drives me crazy about ready-to-drink supplements and drives most sports dietitians crazy is that they have, unfortunately, removed all of the carbohydrate from most of them. When in reality...
Ah, interesting. Yes, I never even thought of that. It's been a while since I've reviewed all the supplements.
Right. And why would they do that? Because they're trying to cater to this narrative of diet culture and society and fitness and being so anti-carbohydrate. I'm like, wait a minute, that is exactly when your body needs it and you're going to take it away. So every time, even if I do recommend, okay, a ready to drink supplement afterwards, which is really just a pre-made protein drink, if there's no carbohydrate, I'm telling my athletes, I need you to have carbohydrate with this thing. Mm. Sometimes those drinks are convenient, so I can understand it. But if we can't find one with enough carbohydrate, I'm having them add that carbohydrate back in with another food. Other really common ones are pre-workouts. So things with some kind of stimulant someone might take before their training. A lot of times it's before lifting. Sometimes people will take it before their longer runs. Most of the time that's really just caffeine or another molecule called beta-alanine. If you've ever taken a pre-workout and gotten the jitters, that's probably beta-alanine. BCAAs is another one. So branched chain amino acids. I'll see a lot of people sipping on those and I'm not really sure why. I don't know if they are really sure
why. From my understanding, I'm gonna ask your opinion on just supplements in general in a second, but with BCAAs, there's really not conclusive evidence, correct? Correct me if I'm wrong.
You are correct, which is why I look at them and I'm like, hey, whatever floats your boat. But if you're in my office, we're gonna talk about it. And that conversation is gonna look like, you know, why do you think you need these? What have you heard? Do you like them? Have you been using them for a long time? Et cetera, et cetera. But most of the time, if you are eating protein throughout the day, meeting your protein needs, you're getting those specific type of branched chain amino acids in the protein that you eat elsewhere throughout the day. So extra is not really going to do anything for you. I think people sometimes forget the whole more protein doesn't equal more muscle. So it's going to be the same thing with any other kind of amino acid. More BCAAs doesn't mean more branched chain amino acids in your muscles. More collagen doesn't mean more collagen in your body.
Let's stop right there. Let's talk about collagen. Let's educate the people. What do you dispel about all that?
Collagen is tricky. It's kind of newer in its popularity and its trendiness, I would say. So quick nutrition lesson would be when we intake some kind of protein, we're going to break down that protein molecule and we're going to absorb through our gut pieces of that protein molecule in the form of amino acids. So when we take a supplement like collagen, we're not absorbing collagen into our bodies. We're absorbing broken down pieces and parts of collagen. And if your body needs to make collagen, then sure, it'll use those pieces. It also might use it got from food you ate earlier that day. But just eating it isn't going to stimulate this reaction in your body that you suddenly, you know, have more and your skin is glowing and amazing. Collagen can be helpful in scenarios where someone has been injured and has real tissue damage, because if you think about it, that's a scenario where a person might need more collagen. So providing them more of the building blocks can potentially be beneficial.
That was a great little nutrition lesson, because really it's supplement. I think the key at what we're hearing is that supplementing more of something doesn't necessarily equal better or equal faster, right, quicker results of XYZ. Yes. What are your thoughts just in for supplements in general?
I usually give different information depending on the age of the person I'm speaking to. If they're a kid, Like, we don't need supplements. If it's a multivitamin, I still want to make sure that they're safe. So of course, we can talk about third-party testing and what that means. Blanket statement, you know, nutrition supplements or supplements of any kind aren't regulated in the United States. In some other countries, they are. But
what,
you know,
what countries? How do we get them on board in the States?
I'm pretty sure, I believe that the UK, potentially Australia. I don't want to say something that's wrong. So I definitely recommend that people look that up. But other countries do a better job of actually, you know, evaluating their supplements and making sure that they're safe because they do something at all. And we don't do anything here in the States. Usually what I explain to people is, you know, when you buy food at the grocery store, the temperature has been checked, you know, the transportation's been monitored, they're looking at the date, growth, all this stuff, pesticide usage, to make you an informed consumer. That's not the case with a supplement. It's just on the shelf. You don't know what's in it. I don't know what's in it. So supplements that have gone through what we call third-party testing means that that company that made the supplement paid an unbiased research firm to test their supplement, make sure that it's safe from banned substances, and make sure that you're getting exactly what you believe you're getting based on the nutrition label. So there's not some other random ingredient in there. It's in the exact correct dosage. I think a lot of people don't really realize Vampit or widespread supplements are that don't have what you think that they have in them.
Explain that a little more, because what do you mean? A label says that it has this, it means it should have it. Right. What do you mean that it's not gonna have that in it?
So they've had studies come out where you go to, let's say, a grocery store, you pull a bunch of bottles of vitamin D, bunch of different brands, or even within the same brand. So let's pick, you know, brand Y. We've taken brand Y of vitamin D off the shelf, and we're going to go inside, and on the bottle, it says that it's 100% of your daily value of vitamin D. That's what's in every single pill. And we're going to go into bottle one, and we see the first pill's got 9% of your daily value. And then we pull out a second pill, and it says 1,000% of your daily value. And then we go to bottle two, and we pull a pill, and it says 30% of your daily value, plus there's some iron in there. So it really can be other ingredients from contamination of manufacturing equipment. It can just be you're not getting the dosage you think you are, which can be dangerous. I think that's another thing people don't realize with supplements. Like, you made a really good point of more not being better. I think a lot of people think if I take more, I'm just going to pee it out or get rid of it. And that's not the case. As you and I know, you can reach toxic levels of some minerals and vitamins that our bodies need. So it's important to be mindful of those things.
Or on the flip side, something I just thought of too, let's say somebody is deficient in a certain supplement or a certain vitamin or mineral, which in that case, we would recommend a supplement, right? Let's say it's vitamin D.
Absolutely.
And I think of if, you know, oh, we'll take a vitamin D supplement and somebody just picks them off the shelf and it's something that is, has
not
the smaller amount,
yeah.
they come back 3 months later to get their labs checked and they're still deficient because
and
of-
And then what do? They give them more supplement. They say, okay, well, it's not working. Let's up the dosage. So it's incredibly important to know what you're putting in your body when it comes to supplementation. When it comes to vitamin and mineral toxicity, that doesn't happen because somebody eats too many raspberries and now they've got overwhelming amount of vitamin C in their body. It happens.
They don't turn into a blueberry like, what's her name? Bianca or whatever.
Willy Wonka. Yeah. Unfortunately, not accurate. Yeah, it happens because people take supplements. And I have people who come in truly with a shopping bag full of supplements that I have to sit there and go through and say, this isn't third-party tested. That hasn't been tested. These two things actually do the same thing in your body. This has vitamin D. This also has vitamin D. You shouldn't be taking that much. And so it's kind of the wild, wild west out there. I encourage people to be informed, because nobody tells you this stuff. Nobody says when you go to the grocery store and buy a multivitamin that it might not be what it says it is. No one's going to have that frame of mind. You're going to go there trusting that it is what it says it is. And, you know, same thing with any of those, I won't say outright the name, but those specific supplement stores that you can go to and buy things. I'm telling you right now, more often than not, what's on the shelf is not what it says it is.
I think it's important to, gosh, I hope people right now listening are like, what? You know, because even however many times that I know this, every time I hear this and talk about it, it's still, I get out enraged and it blows my mind because literally anybody can make a supplement. I know several people in the fitness industry who I have worked with who have created their own supplements, which like, let's talk about that in the scheme of Instagram and social media.
Yes. Such a scary thought. Number one, that anybody off the street could create a supplement. I like to think I know a lot about supplements, but I'm not a chemist. I can't go make a supplement. that would not be good for anybody. But yeah, I think supplements I see really heavily in that thought process of so-and-so who I trust and I look up to takes that. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to be like them. They're really strong, or you like the way that they look, or they perform really well, whatever it may be. And you think duplicating that is going to make you like them, or they're going to unfortunately advertise for a supplement and say, oh, this has really helped me in whatever way. And then, you know, pushing it onto people who have different medical histories and maybe really shouldn't be taking things like that. I can't tell you how many people I've had come through to me that have had their gallbladder removed and had a really crazy bout with keto. And I'm like, why did no one tell you that that was a terrible idea? And it's because we're getting information from these people that maybe don't think that they're causing as much harm as they potentially are, but aren't experts and shouldn't be providing us with that information and really shouldn't be pushing those supplements.
And you don't know that this person on social media, are they getting paid for it? I mean, people, there's a bunch of legalities behind that, that people should be saying what they're getting paid for it and what they're not. But you know, if somebody represents a certain company, or there's a lot of multi-level marketing out there of, or why, what's the motive behind it, you know, and is it actually something that somebody genuinely needs, or are they just getting a kickback from it?
For sure. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing that world really expose itself right now with coronavirus. There's a lot of people who are pushing products, who are pushing certain ways of life, saying that it is going to protect people, or that if they get it, it won't be as bad. It's going to make them immune. All these promises that are false promises and can put someone in a potentially dangerous situation. If I'm taking something that I think is going to boost my immune system, which you and I know isn't a thing, right? I'm going to maybe be a little bit less responsible. Maybe I'm going to go spend some time in a group of people and just go out and about because I think I'm safe, when in reality I'm not.
That's a great point. I didn't even think of that, of, oh, well, I've took this pill or this shake, this drink, and I have boosted immunity. So I am superhuman. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's terrifying.
Right. Especially when we know that if your immune system is overworking, that's a bad thing. That often means that your body's attacking itself. You've got some kind of immune disorder dysfunction, and that's dangerous. So you want a normally functioning immune system.
Right. Normal is okay.
Yes.
Are there any supplements that people should absolutely avoid? Maybe some that you see a lot of that you're just constantly saying, no, will we stop? Will you stop this? And if so, why?
I don't know if I could pinpoint to a very specific molecule most of the time, just because I'm sure somewhere someone has a situation where it's relevant. But I would say any product that makes a really big claim, right? Any product that says it's going to boost your energy in your metabolism and it's going to do all of these things, probably not. Supplements are supposed to be just that. They're supposed to be supplementary to what you're already eating. They're not necessarily supposed to, you know, take place of anything else or honestly alter your life. A supplement is usually, we're lacking a nutrient for one reason or another, maybe a medical condition, or just, you know, your eating habits, you can't maintain your needs for whatever reason it may be. And so you take something to kind of fill in that gap. That's what a supplement is meant for. In that scenario, I'm talking about things like vitamin D and fish or some people, a lot of people will take iron, a lot of people who run a lot and are high impact sports because those people need more iron, people who take multivitamins kind of as an insurance policy. When it comes to performance supplements, I would say most people don't really need any at all. You can get by fine with a little bit of protein powder here and there, again, for the sake of convenience, but most people really don't need them at all. I would say a lot of people, you know, taking pre-workout and it's got all these different molecules and things in there, like you probably don't really need that. You know, what is the purpose of that? A lot of times it's the stimulant in there, the caffeine, the beta-alanine. There are supplements that you can find that are just those things. So you're not getting all of this extra hocus pocus.
Hocus pocus. That's a great way to put it because that's what it sure looks like when you read the labels.
Right. Sometimes the labels alone I look at and I just know.
When I was at my internship at Purdue, I remember reviewing a supplement label that had it had horny goat weed in it. No joke.
Yes.
That you've probably seen it.
Yes.
It was literally called horny goat weed. And all I had to do was find in the reviews of that something like it causes issues with sex or something. And I showed that to the college guy. And
yeah.
He was like, oh, okay, I'll stop taking it.
Herbs are really tough because we don't know a lot about them. And sometimes they can interfere with other medications too. So I often don't recommend supplements. Will say that they have a proprietary blend. That's a huge red flag of they're not telling you what's in that blend. Maybe it's what they call their secret sauce. It's a mix of all these different things. And here's the total of the blend, but you don't know what proportion of all those different ingredients that you're getting. And so that's something I will tell people to avoid. If you can't look at that and know what you're getting out of it, it's probably not a good idea. And then, of course, avoiding things that aren't third-party tested. That's just an unnecessary risk.
That makes me think of right now with coronavirus and, like, for example, pre-workout, a lot of the stimulants out there, a lot of those labels will say proprietary blend and not even tell you how much caffeine is in it.
Right.
And we're talking a time of anxiety and people feeling overwhelmed. Well, take a look at what you're drinking.
Yeah,
you may not even know.
So much coffee, and then that on top of it, and then potentially energy drinks, depending on the individual. Like, this is too much. There is a limit to how much caffeine you should have in a day.
Right, despite popular belief.
Yes, absolutely. So I think really just avoiding things that you're unsure of. If you don't know what it's going to do for you, if it's making a lot of claims, if the label looks like some advertiser threw up all over it, is probably not a good idea to take either. If it seems really pushy, just making a lot of promises, or if their website looks really gimmicky, those are just red flags to me. And a lot of times I'll have athletes coming in and they say, I've been taking this forever. Is this okay to take? 9 times out of 10, it's not. But I'll say to them, you know, I'm going to look this up for you. So I'll put it into drug-free sport. Drugfreesport.org is a really great resource. I'll look on the NSF website. So NSF is a third-party testing firm, or Informed Choice. That's another testing firm. I'll look that supplement up, but I also usually contact the supplement brand themselves and say, hey, I'm a registered dietitian. I mostly work with athletes. I have an athlete come in and take this. Unfortunately, I can't allow them to take this if it's third-party tested. Can you tell me about your testing process? And a lot of times they're not third-party tested, but I'll respond saying, I appreciate the information. I really hope that you start third-party testing in the future.
I love that. You're like a boss dietitian who gets done. You're like, not only am I going to research it for you, I am going to contact the company and tell them why. It's so true though, because otherwise I feel like, you know, that's part of our role in what we do, is we have to be a voice because so many people just don't understand. There's so much misinformation out there.
Sure.
That, like you said, can potentially hurt people.
Yeah. And that information can be held in the person who makes that supplement. Just like you said, anybody can walk off the street and make a supplement. So what if that person doesn't even know about third-party testing, doesn't even really know what should be in the supplement, and then people are buying it?
Oh, so much. And I love that you said the resource. You read my mind. I was literally like, ask her about where people should look. So those are great resources, and we'll definitely be sure to to link those in the show notes. So last few couple questions, because we did have some people on Instagram reach out. So one of my friends, who's also a dietitian, actually, she is a lot in the CrossFit space. And she is just, what are people with these numbers? She calls it CrossFit nutrition, because there's no dietitians. A lot of times there's, you know, quote unquote nutritionists giving macro recommendations and whatnot. So in the sports world, in the field of sports nutrition, how much protein do you typically recommend for an athlete? And do you recommend off of pounds or kilograms?
I, of course, work in kilograms. Yes, it is. It's been funny to be a student in the sports world and kind of growing into it. And the things that I've heard of being in the gym myself, you know, having a gram per pound of body weight. And that's really a lot. That is upper limit. You're definitely not utilizing that protein in a protein way. I think what a lot of people don't realize, because why would they, unless they've taken copious amounts of biochemistry, is that is that protein can be turned into glucose if your body needs it. So you're taking in all this protein. We touched upon this earlier. More protein doesn't equal more muscle, because that protein can be used for other things. Protein doesn't have to stay as protein in the body. I will set athletes pretty high when it comes to their protein needs, but I've started digging a little bit more research into this, because I almost think that the levels that we have now might even be higher than they need to be. And so here's my thing with protein. If you're eating so much protein that it's displacing other nutrients that you could potentially have, that's something to look at. If you're eating so much protein that somehow translates into you getting less carbohydrate, that's something to look into. Athletes need a lot of carbohydrate to focus on recovery, to make sure that your glycogen stores are refilled after exercise. Having that carbohydrate in your body is actually what's going to protect that protein, so it gets used for what you want it to be used for in your muscles, instead of that protein being used for energy needs, because your body doesn't have enough carbohydrate. So when it comes to protein, I don't want to throw out a number, because I feel like people get dangerous.
Right.
Numbers, but I will say it's not as high as people think it is.
Yeah. I love that. And it's so interesting. And I had a friend, this has been years, but she got really into bodybuilding so far. I mean, this coach or whoever was recommending such a high amount of protein that she actually ended up having kidney damage, because her kidneys were protein overloaded that she couldn't break it down. And so that's a great point, and great way to just summarize is that it's not as much as you think.
Yes. There's room for all the macronutrients. We don't have to zero in on one. We're supposed to have all of them.
Yes. And bouncing off that a little bit, another question we had come in actually from a physical therapist who, can you tell my people, or I don't know why everybody who's asking questions is in the CrossFit space, not to bash on CrossFit. I work in a CrossFit gym part-time too, so I see it all. But she mentioned that she sees a lot of people getting injured when they're starting to cut weight for a meet. So can you talk to us a little bit more about injury and nutrition and how those two tie in?
That is such a great question, because that cutting, that getting leaner that everybody seems to be chasing after. And I will have Olympic sprinters who want to cut, and I don't understand why. And I do at the same time, because of pressures and things like that. But from a performance standpoint, you're putting so much stress on your body, so much stress on your muscles, your bones, your ligaments, all of that stuff. If you're not nurturing it
already when you're
that
close to a meet or a competition or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Like more than the average person, for sure. Even if you're a fitness-minded person, usually if you're something, you might reduce that a little bit the week of, but weeks prior, you're probably building up to that. And you're just putting so much stress on your body. Anytime we're doing some kind of heavy physical activity, we create micro tears in our muscles, right? Those micro tears need to be rebuilt, and they're going to be rebuilt with the food that you're eating. And that means protein and carbohydrate combined. So when I see people who are cutting and putting their body through a lot of stress, you're not giving your body back what it needs to recover. recovering and rest is a huge part to, you know, being a fitness-minded individual, being an athlete, competing in any kind of sport, training for everything. If you're not making time for recovery, you're not really training properly. And recovery doesn't mean just rest days and off days. It also means really good night's sleep. It means trying to mitigate stress. And it means eating enough to make sure that your body can physically recover from what you're doing to it while you exercise. So that's really common. And it's really common in a lot of endurance athletes too, who are kind of after that same thing, that leaner, lighter, thinking it's going to translate into better, faster. But what we see is they might have some benefit in the short term, but long term, they have really bad injuries. They have a really hard time recovering from, because they just weren't giving their body what it needed to recover from all of that training and all of that stress. It's when you're going to see stress fractures, or, you know, maybe a runner gets faster and then they get slower and then they start feeling weaker and low energy. You know, how many articles and stories have we seen of that before we stop them early and say, you know, leaning out is not the answer. Recovering properly, giving back the energy that you've lost, that's the answer. Getting stronger is the answer, instead of trying to reduce ourselves, trying to build ourselves back up.
Right. Oh, I love that. That was a beautiful explanation of all that, right? Oh, so good. And my last question, because I know we both kind of come from the same mindset and space of we love fitness, we love sport, otherwise we wouldn't be in this field. We love food, but we also see the bigger picture, right? And I get this question all the time, so I would love to hear your thoughts. Is it possible to have these, you know, physique or performance goals while still practicing intuitive eating?
I do think that it's possible. I think you have to keep in mind, again, who you are as a person, your lifestyle, your goals, just like any other person coming off the street wanting to get into intuitive eating, you've got to take their life into account, their work schedule, their family schedule. What does their life look out throughout the week? How does it ebb and flow? How is eating going to fit into that? Throwing training into the mix is just another thing to keep in mind. Yes, there is nutrient timing aspects, and of course, wanting to recover, wanting to reduce that stress that you've put on your body. Again, maybe certain micronutrients we might focus a little bit more on. If you're a high impact athlete, that does mean more iron more often than not. If you're someone that's in a contact sport, then maybe we do want to focus on nutrients and nutrition that can support joint health, things of that nature. But even still, you can do that from an intuitive eating perspective.
Yeah, I love that. I think, like you said, it ends up just going back to your why, right? And what's your motivator? Is it really physique and performance from that competitive brain space or the comparative brain space? And I think that really can drive kind of the motive.
Yeah, absolutely. And that can also kind of help you understand if you are going to, you know, follow along on this journey and build yourself up, or are you unfortunately going to potentially self-sabotage because you're not giving yourself what you need? So I think that why is really important in how we end up, you know, getting that person to their goal.
Well, it has been so much fun talking to you, and it's such a wealth of information, whether somebody's listening who is an athlete currently, an amateur athlete, athlete in another life. Like, I think there's so many important lessons from this episode. And before we wrap up, I ask every guest this question, and I forgot that I didn't tell you I was going to ask it. So this is on the spot. What is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
That's a great question. That's a cute question.
You can say this month, because nobody really knows what day it is, what week it is.
I will tell you the best thing that happened to me today, which is really minor and kind of funny, is that I have been holding onto this couch in a storage unit for what has felt like forever, but has been about 4 months right now. I recently moved, had some time in between places, had to put furniture somewhere, and I've been selling things off piece by piece, but this couch has been last item standing for far too long, and today I finally got rid of it.
All right.
So happy to not pay that storage unit fee next month.
Oh, because you had to pay this storage unit because you couldn't hold it. Oh my gosh, what a pain.
Yeah. Ugh. Just for one thing. I'm like, it is finally gone. It is done. The weight is lifted off of me. It's over.
So have you actually like made the deal? Like, have you actually given it away? Is it gone?
The deal is done. It's closed. I was finally able to give it away today, thankfully. I was nervous. It was touch and go for a second. Wasn't sure if they were going to take it or not, but they did. Now it's gone.
Was it Facebook Marketplace or how'd you sell it?
Oh my, yes, it was Facebook Marketplace.
That place, I put stuff on there and I go back and forth and then people message me and I'm like, I'd get nervous. So yeah, I'm glad that you had a good experience.
Yeah. Quarantine made it tough. We stayed 6 feet apart. It was all safe.
It's for your benefit.
Yes, but I needed to get rid of it. So.
So funny. I love it. So if our listeners want to find you, what's the best way to contact you? Where do you like to hang out?
You can certainly find me on Instagram. So my Instagram handle is my first name, my last name, followed by RD. So that is Taryn Cullen RD. First name is a little difficult to spell, so I'm sure you'll have it written somewhere. I can also be reached via email at Taryn@nourished-strong.com.
Awesome. Well, we will be sure to link all that in the show notes. And it was so good talking to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.